C1PR. Number 15B.
Asking a right principle as truth, what can principle as truth say? Nothing else but that to a principle attitude as truth is doing it. Doing a principle attitude, that's our answer to every prayer. See, in principle as life, we have the recognition that we have to be willing to go the way. In principle as life, it is that principled attitude which said, all right, I'm not going the way I want, I'm not going to put my own way into operation, but I let that way lead me which is principled. And so the next stone, principle as truth, says, and in the measure you go that way, in the measure as you are willing to do that way, that's your answer. Doesn't say you get the answer, that's your answer, that's our answer. Because the moment we go our true individuality, we are true men, we are healthy men. These prayers here are so enormously deep, they are much deeper than we sometimes think it out. They touch just the core of our life. And we would find in this first prayer, in this first chapter of the textbook on prayer, we would find already the wealth of Christian Science. Then we come to the last tone of principle as love, which I tried to epitomize as honest prayer. Honest prayer bestows pardon through correction and not by remitting the penalty. That, again, you see, in principle as truth, we saw that accepting the way of life which principle enforces or interprets to me, accepting that I do go the right way, that's my answer, that I do go the way. And doing that way, doing the right individual method of living, I am on the correct way, and that's my pardon. Then I don't need another part. That's being the correction of everything. Because then I do everything in the correct way. So against that stands a personal pardon, that where she says, she takes three different levels of pardon and says, well, in legal law, the magistrate, he can perhaps remit the penalty. Or, she says, there is a moral law, and the moral law has the right to acquit and condemn, but always demands restitution before mortals can go higher. The moral always has a demand on us, but it never can enforce it. It only demands it, can never enforce it, because the moral has no principle behind it, has no God behind it. Whereas then she comes to the third and says, but broken law brings penalty in order to compel this progress. The divine principle has a compelling force, and therefore the divine principle always compels fulfillment. And so the moment a law is broken, principle comes into operation, and principle's operation says, all right, I compel progress. I compel progress through penalty, which is brought through sin, I compel an awakening and therefore a going up higher. So we see, we can turn in a situation to a legal law and may find pardon, but she says that brings no lasting benefit. It's therefore no principled solution. No principle as love. It's no principled solution. She says, well, we can also turn to the moral law. But the moral law has no principle behind it either. It always has demands on us, but it never can enforce them, because there is no principle behind it. The only thing that has a principle behind it is law itself. Law itself is always principled and is always striving to fulfillment. And even if I break the law, I can or try to break the law, I cannot break the divine law. And so by breaking or by thinking I can break a divine law, I just get penalty, and that forces me to compel progress. Because nothing is an uneasier state as if one gets penalized. And then one jolly well gets so unrested that one is seeking for a solution. So whatever is going on, principle never pardons until sin is corrected. Until, she says, our sins or mistakes, till they are corrected. But the beauty of it is that this correction is not a moral effort and is not a legal effort, but is a spiritual law. That's something which we should never... If we do something wrong, we may get away by a good magistrate, or we may get away by paying something as a restitution for it, but that never corrects the basis, the initial mistake. The only thing that... And therefore we can always fall back to the offense. We can always, again, repeat the offense. We are not brought forward one step by trying a solution through a legal or a moral law. The only way that brings us higher, so that mortals can go up higher, the only thing that brings us any further is only the spiritual way, a principled way. That brings fulfillment alone, and alone fulfillment. Well, that's in a big way the tone of principle. Let me perhaps go quickly through question 25, I think it was. I said, note the various forms in which dishonesty or hypocrisy can manifest itself. It would be very interesting if you, on the ground of what you have heard and what you think over, would go through this fourth prayer and think out in which way hypocrisy tries to manifest itself. How it comes to us in the way of self-deception and self-infatuation, of self-justification, of self-covering, where we try to cover everything else, where we try to hide everything and fool everybody, how we overrate ourselves and overestimate ourselves, how we are self-pleasing and where there is self-contentment and self-satisfaction, selfishness and self-interest and self-seeking and self-advantage, all that comes in. There is perhaps not in these words, some are out of the text, but the tone of it is all about that, you see. It's all hypocrisy. It's all an unwillingness to put our personal self away and let mind, spirit and soul sound through our true personality, so that we are a new personality. Then question 26, that's very interesting too. Note how every subtone shows a need for conformity in one's attitude and life. You will find, for instance, this conformity, how in various ways she points it out. In mind, for instance, she brings out that there must be a conformity between the spoken and audible prayer on one side and the real desire. That desire, the real inward unspoken desire, must conform with the spoken prayer. Then in spirit, for instance, she shows how there must be that prayer must be in conformity with our character. see that the prayer must be in conformity with the character, that the inward must be in conformity with the external and the appearance of the inward, that there is no discrepancy, that there must be a conformity of prayer in words and with the feelings. See how wonderfully one gets that whole personality, which is whole in every phase. Then in soul, for instance, she brings out that there must be a conformity of knowing what we are with that what we really are. See, there must be an honesty of self-examination, where we honestly know what we are, because usually we don't like to think we are something very different than what we honestly are. So there must be conformity in that. It's a great purification that goes on. Or in principle, she says, our life and acting must be in conformity with our prayers. Then in life, she says, there must be a conformity of the desire to follow Christ with really following Him. Not only to desire to follow Christ. We know how easily we go into ecstasy and emotion and say, oh yes, I would follow Christ. And if only Jesus were here, we would follow Him. But when the Christ knocks our door, are we following Him? That's what she asks here. If the Christ knocks today at our door, and He knocks every moment at our door, it's a question, are we conforming to our desires? Are we walking in the light so far as we perceive it? It's only so far as we perceive it. It doesn't ask more. But that conformity must be. Then in truth, she says, is there a conformity of prayer and answer? If there is no conformity of prayer and answer, then I know that my prayer is wrong. Because right prayer is the answer. Right prayer doesn't give an answer. Right prayer is the answer. There is conformity of prayer and answer. And so doing the right prayer is the answer. Suddenly got quiet in here. Did you hear me, by the way? Yes? Then in love it is that she demands a conformity with principle. See? That only principle can pardon when we correct, when we are in line with principle. So we have the climax of conformity where we conform with principle. Just think them over. And it's a big task. I'm just a little bit shattered by what is in this first prayer and finding out how less one conforms to it. But I'm not going to make a moral effort to conform to it. I rather like to be naughty than try to be good. That's quite true. And that's, I think, a bit more honest. But we are also as honest as to know that one day we have to grow out of everything which is not principled. But that growing out of everything which is not principled must be a new birth and not a willful moral effort. And it is not an effort, and that principled way is not just a mental way. It starts with a mental way, that's mind, with the desire. But then it needs, as a subtone of spirit, it needs all our earnestness and all our devotion to it. And as a third, it needs a constant watchfulness to rebuke everything which needs to be rebuked. And that we can't do mentally. We have to do it, be it. And that takes perhaps time and takes energy, sometimes a success, sometimes a failure. What does it do? That doesn't matter, that it is sometimes a failure. All that counts in the realm of the divine principle is that which is principle, which is like principle, and that is acceptable to God, and that God knows. And all the rest doesn't really matter. It's our desire deep desire that matters, and what we put into that desire that matters, and how honest and sincere we are that matters. And that leads us in life the way. That brings us on a new way, on a quite new way. And as we are willing to accept that quite new way and not to interfere with our views into that way, we are the answer. We are living the answer. And so prayer and answer will conform, and we find our pardon in God, because we have gone the corrected way, a correct way. Well, that brings us to the fifth subject of life, the fifth prayer of life. Well, what does that new subject tell us? It's a rather short one, and yet it's full of depth. It is as if she would ask here, what sort of healing do you want? Or perhaps even clearer, on what ground, on what basis, on what fundamental basis do you want to have an effect of your prayer? And so it is mainly a big explication how a basis or how every cause has its effect, and that we have to be very clear about what cause we choose to have an effect. And it shows that if we don't choose a cause which is principled, that the effect will not be of the nature of life, of newness of life, will not be a constructive effect. Life is always that which governs the law of cause and effect as one law, and shows that always on the basis of a principle, life interprets that principle to us anew, the newness of life. That life brings always to us the result of the source. And so here we find the big clarification. What should be our source or cause or basis on which we build in order to have a positive, constructive effect, an effect which is really life and not an effect which only imitates life. Therefore, in this paragraph we will find all about understanding versus belief, because we know that through an understanding of God we can have wonderful effects like healing. But we also know that on the basis of belief, if the belief is strong enough, we can also have so-called wonderful effects, like we have with the drugs, which also heal. It isn't so that drugs never heal. Thousands and millions of people every year are healed by drugs and relieved by drugs, and which are called wonderful healings. So this fifth subject is that subject which clarifies what sort of healing do we want. Do we want the healing that is of the nature of God, or do we want to have a healing that is of the nature of belief? Every subtone, practically every subtone, is a clarification of these two bases and effects. It's always a showing that every basis has its effects. Perhaps the best thing is if I just start with the text and see how little by little she develops that subject. See, she starts right in, I think, with a sentence which just epitomizes again, or gives the tone of the whole fifth subject. It says, petitions bring to mortals only the result of mortals' own faith. Here, she depicts the law of cause and effect in prayer. Says that which prays gives an effect of the same nature as that which prays. If that which prays is a belief, then that which we get is the effect of the belief. Well, if that which prays is a principled attitude, then that which we get is the effect of principle, and therefore is really of the nature of life. Petitions bring to mortals only the results of mortals' own faith. Well, that's something which we have to consider, that it is only bringing. Because in ordinary prayer we think, no, the petitions of mortal brings to us also God's faith, God's nature. We go in ordinary prayer, you know how people go and pray. And why do they pray? They pray because they have the belief that not their belief is going to give an effect, but that God is going to give them an effect. Meaning that mortals' prayers is so efficacious and so important that even God runs and fulfills mortals' demands. As if God would be just a servant to whom we can say, come here, and he comes, and go there, and he goes. Here she says very clearly, petition brings to mortals only that which mortals have in their own faith. They never can bring something outside of their own faith. So, every prayer, to whatever it is addressed to, be it addressed to God Almighty, or be it addressed to Baal, or be it addressed to a drug, or be it addressed to a priest, or be it addressed to anything, only brings back that which we have in belief, which mortals have in belief. You see the law of cause and effect, and you see how now we come to one of the most wonderful things in life. You see, life is always a circle. Life is symbolized by a circle. Here she depicts first the mortal circle, how the serpent only bites in his own tail, how mortal mind revolves only in its own circle. What mortal faith gives out, that it gets back. And that which it gets back, it gives out again, and it supports again what it gets back. It's one rotation, always within its own realm. Whereas ordinary prayer thinks that we can, through prayer, somehow call down something other than is in our mentality. Something else, something of a different nature than is in our mentality. And here, in the first sentence, she lays down that clear insight that this is not possible. That mortal mind revolves in its own orbit, and it is a circle just eating itself up and up again. Whereas naturally the positive sense of it is also a circle, it's life. How is that sense? It shows when we come to life, it shows, well, life has what basis? What is the basis, the cause of life? And we can see that life always has its basis in mind and spirit and soul as one principle. That's the basis of life. And what does it do with that? Life is that aspect of that principle which says, I support myself, I sustain myself, I'm self-sustaining. Which says nothing else than that mind, spirit and soul, as the one divine principle, is always sustaining itself. That's life. When principle as mind, spirit, soul is always sustaining and self-supporting itself, it is self-supporting mind and self-supporting spirit and self-supporting soul as the divine principle of life. In other words, even life can never support something outside of its own orbit, or it wouldn't be a circle. It goes out from a divine basis, goes out as mind, spirit, soul on the divine basis, and supports that basis. It supports mind, spirit, soul. And so it strengthens our understanding of mind, spirit, soul as one principle. And therefore, again, by falling back on this principle, it supports itself and strengthens itself. And that goes on, that eternal circle and rhythm. Whereas one, the belief is that prayer is asking life to support something outside of life. God can never support something outside of itself. Therefore, and it can never rest on something outside of itself. So life, which is the focal point of self-supporting, self-maintenance, self-establishment, multiplication of itself, it's always that self-support is always basing itself on what it has in itself, namely on the principle of mind, spirit, soul. Always establishing, always supporting its own nature. Never something outside of its own nature. That's why in the whole chapter on prayer, really, we never find how Mrs. Eddy would ask us how to pray for something. You remember already in mind as spirit, she says, do we pray to be better? To, for a purpose. And she said, and she wipes it out and says, no, it's always a prayer is always something which revolves in its own orbit of divinity, which always is concerned with divinity, and which is always praying to divinity. And in life, we can see how she now depicts that we have always to base ourselves on nothing else but on that which has gone before, on the principled attitude, on the principle of prayer. That if that is our cause, that if prayer is based on a principled prayer, on a principled attitude, then we get back what principle has in store of us. Then we have an effect of principle, which is always positive. But if we fall back, if we base ourselves on something different, something outside of divinity, then we have only a basis of belief. And that brings to mortals only the results of the belief, whatever these results may be.